Good morning. Thank you all for being here. I just want to make this announcement as we get started. This proceeding will be recorded and the audio will be available on the Senate website. Also, all the recommendations will be made public on the Senate website following today's meeting. Let me first say that as a Senate body, we've made a commitment to restructuring the scope and the operations of Missouri state government. And this group of senators and others have made a commitment to fund a state government that is affordable and sustainable for the citizens of Missouri. And the function that has been performed by members of this Senate body are very important to the future and the viability of state government and services. So I want to take this time to thank each senator who participated in this function, and I'm optimistic that many of the things that have been gathered over the last week to 10 days can be implemented, and we can enjoy cost savings and greater efficiencies, and with that be able to fund our major priorities. And so with that, I understand that we have several presenters. And I've noticed that as soon as I came in, everybody got more than an arm's length away from me. So I might add that I'm not contagious, that I'm aware of. And so, do what?
Lightning strikes.
Lightning strikes? Okay. Who's leading off? I think we're going to start with education, and Senator Pierce headed up that working group, and there he is right in front of me. Senator, take it away.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're honored to be doing this. I'd like to introduce Patrick, who's done a lot of the work on not only our committee, but other committees. I did introduce Patrick as the Mayor Pro Tem of California, Missouri. And he liked the plug, but he said, you forgot to mention that he's an eligible bachelor. So so I'm going to mention that he is an eligible bachelor, and he has business cards. So
he's got cards, too, to hand out?
He does. He does.
And I found out Patrick always comes prepared.
He always comes prepared. That's right. Well, we'll zip through this real quickly. Patrick, go ahead and let's get started. On our committee, we had myself, Senator Callahan, Cunningham, and Lamping, and then also Senator Crowell came and gave a presentation as well. We had, next slide, we had 95 different suggestions. As you can imagine, some were redundant. Some actually contradicted other suggestions. One overall theme that we got was that we need to take a look at administrators versus teachers and take a look at what that ratio is and can we change that. We also had some folks from DESE, and they talked about recommendations versus regulations. So that was a healthy conversation.
So, Senator, how far? Or did the discussion go in that actually being able to be implemented? Does rules and the law prevent that from happening at this time?
Well, we have the MSIP standards, and those are recommendations, and so they're not actual requirements. One thing that we didn't want to do was to encourage districts to do certain things, and they'll be penalized on the backside from DESE, and so that was a fairly healthy discussion.
And what was the feedback? Did you find much support for that type of action or the possibility of that occurring?
Well, support from the committee. And then DESE basically said that those are recommendations, and so that would not be something they would be penalized for doing. And, of course, that's always a difficult thing when local school districts and superintendents say, well, DESE says, and then it's a kind of a local interpretation from there.
Certainly.
The next slide, please. We did have quite a few suggestions on consolidation of operating costs to possibly look at not just consolidating of districts, but are there some things, transportation, extracurricular activities, administration, special services, and things like that. And I will say that both DESE and higher ed were in our meetings, and we brought them up a lot for their input as well. But there was a lot of discussion on consolidation of certain things. Next slide. Here were some other issues that were brought up, the concept of merit pay, and also to study vouchers, the possibility of that. Next slide. This goes along with somewhat of consolidating services, cooperate bus routes, and we've had several bills in the last few years talking about transportation routes, and then allowing school districts to to share administration. Next slide. Increased monitoring of school district fund balances. We talked about what would be a good level of fund balances and how districts should be. And also, if districts are having a disproportionately high balance, then that should be addressed, because in some ways the state is somewhat subsidizing that. Next slide deals with higher education, and this is one that was a suggestion of rebooting last year. We had the 2020 committees. This was a suggestion from them, and one was the suggestion was to merge the two state education departments, higher ed as well as school board. Academic review, that's the process that's going on right now. The governor has challenged our higher education institutions to look at for mission and specialization. I think there's a lot of support for that and to continue that process. At this point, Senator Callahan had some great recommendations, and I'd like to turn it over to Senator Callahan and Don Thalhuber for some more discussion.
I can just move.
How are you this morning, Senator?
Homer Griffin. Anyway, Rob remembers him. Anyway.
Homer Griffin.
Mike Douglas, Secretary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chairman, first let me preface this, that while the title in there says Senator Callahan's recommendations on the formula, I think we all know that I did not write the school foundation formula. It was Mr. Don Thalhuber. For the rebooting process, I asked Don to take a look at the formula, identify issues in the formula that could, take a fresh look at where problems were, and he's identified a couple that are obviously public policy decisions. I would note, just as a historical reference, when the formula passed the Senate, some of these changes were made in the conference process after the House had adopted them, and it clearly affects the total amount. They are not per se savings. However, they are savings within the formula that could be allocated within the formula to make the formula healthier. And I just asked Don, we're not necessarily taking positions on these other than just to identify these are several of the areas that create a problem. Before I turn it over to Don, I would just briefly state Senator Pierce referred to consolidation. If you look at one of these issues and how small districts are treated in the formula itself provides a disincentive and a technical impossibility for small districts to consolidate. So I would refer that this does refer to the earlier statement that Senator Pierce made about consolidation, that the formula has a disincentive right now within it structurally to encourage consolidation. So at this point, I'll shut up and turn it over to Don.
To just expand on what Senator Callahan said, the disincentive exists because when the formula left the Senate, there was a hold harmless calculation that was a per pupil calculation, meaning you couldn't get less money on a per pupil basis than you got under the old formula. When the bill went to the House, they changed that calculation for districts with less than 350 students to not be a per pupil calculation, but to be a frozen number. So you couldn't get less total money than you got in 2004, 2005, not per pupil. What that means is, in the abstract, some districts could lose a lot of students, be down to 10 kids, and still get paid as if they had 300 students. And that's what this bullet point is about. If we change the hold harmless calculation to be a per pupil calculation for everyone, it would make the formula about $6.5 million cheaper to fully fund. And more importantly for this discussion, it would get rid of the disincentive for consolidation. Right now, if two small districts or a large district and a small district wanted to consolidate, financially it wouldn't make sense because they're not going to get a better shake on a per pupil basis. So that's what this bullet point is about. And again, Senator Callahan's not suggesting we make districts consolidate or force them, just get rid of the disincentive for if districts wanted to consolidate. The other bullet point, the super rich hold harmless bullet point, is basically there are about 21 districts that if you run their entitlement out for their formula calculation and then you compare their hold harmless calculation, there are about 21 districts that are getting over twice as much as their formula calculation, as their entitlement says they should get. So, and these aren't just suburban rich districts. Some of them are, with lots of property wealth. There are some small districts that are getting this calculation because precisely what we talked about in bullet point one, they're getting paid for having more students, a lot more students than they have. The next slide. Currently in the formula, you can get paid for 3 years of attendance. You can pick the highest of three. Estimate of current year, first preceding year, second preceding year. If we were to eliminate the ability to get paid on second preceding year, it would take $31.8 million less to fully fund the formula. And then, we'd be paying districts based on the students they have or closer to what they have than what they had 2 years ago.
We're allowing, in essence, school districts right now in the formula to go back 3 years.
And look at it that way, yes. And this would just allow you to go...
If you had 18,000 students 3 years ago, you're still being paid under the formula currently for 18,000 students, even though there's one example I can think of that they only have 14,000 students. It's changed differently in 3 years. So you see why that barometer doesn't work anymore.
The last point is, I don't know how many of you all are aware of this, when the Senate Bill 287 formula was adopted, the old formula had a double count for summer school attendance. The new formula has a single count for summer school. There was an argument at the time that by dropping to a single count, districts would stop having summer school. And then the people that wanted to go to a single count said, no, they won't. They'll keep having summer school. As a compromise position, we inserted some language in the bill that said, if we ever went beneath the aggregate summer school attendance for the state from 2005-06, then there would be a provision that would be triggered that would allow the following summer for districts to get paid 1.25 for each student, meaning a 25% premium for summer school. Last year, when there were some attempts to limit summer school funding, a lot of districts ended up not having summer school last summer. We have now dipped below that threshold precisely because of that. So now this summer, we are going to be paying districts 25% more for each kid they have in summer school. What Senator Callahan is suggesting is we repeal that provision, so we're just paying a single count, not a 25% premium. So if there's any questions...
Senator Roop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what I'm hearing out of that, just the one thing by just having school districts count the actual students that they have would probably result in about a $31 million less of what we would need to fund.
You could use current year or the first preceding year. So last year, you just couldn't go back 2 years under this. And it would $31.8 million cheaper to fully fund the formula. Now, we're not fully funding the formula. So in reality, the Appropriation Committee is going to do what they're going to do. But it would just get us $31 million closer to full funding when we decided that we had the money to fully fund the formula.
So if you had a extremely fast-growing district, they would be able, you know, to be paid for all the students that are actually showing up, or maybe the year before.
You know, well, you can right now, if you're a fast-growing district, you're using your estimate of current year anyway because it's higher. This would predominantly affect districts that are losing a lot of attendance. So there's several different classes of districts that you could look at.
By not having to put in a $31 million, that would mean we basically wouldn't have to less fund the formula to a certain extent, which thereby, when you do it on a per pupil basis, your faster growing districts will probably be penalized more because of the extra $31 million we're funding kids that really aren't in school districts.
It would shift some money around. From more money would go to growing districts, and it would be taking some money away from districts that have been losing population.
So it's a much more accurate count.
Sure. You could look at it.
Cause us not to be closer to fully funding the formula.
Yes, by 30
down,
million.
In a down budget year.
Yes.
Senator, for example, I mean, I'm aware of this issue. Obviously, as you know, I was involved in a change with an urban district. The Kansas City School District, for example, continued to use this provision and was paid under the formula for students that no longer existed for 2 years after an actual boundary change took place. So imagine that added 4,000 or 5,000 students to their formula because they kept turning in the previous year and the boundary change hadn't happened. So it was a very delayed snapshot of 2 or 3 years to where they continue to be paid as though they had 18,000 students.
Yeah, and you've used your example before, but I think the bigger picture is that by continuing to do this, you still hurt the fast-growing districts as much because you're spending money on students that aren't there, and in a down budget year, when you have to less fund the formula, when you spread that across the wealth, across all students, by paying for students that aren't there, you're actually not giving as much to those that are faster-growing. So it's almost, by continuing to pay for students on there, you're almost penalizing the fast-growing districts as well. So there's two reasons that we need to do this.
Okay, thank you, Don.
Senator Lager would like to ask some questions.
So, Victor, in your scenario, we're actually double paying for those students because the District 1 was counting them for 3 years, and then they were using estimates.
Right. The fast-growing district was turning in the same student twice.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Don. Thank you, Senator Callahan.
Thank you, Senator and Don, for that explanation.
Senator Callahan, I'm sorry, Senator Cunningham had some suggestions. She is here. I don't know, Senator, if you'd like to go over a few of those that you had.
Sure. And Senator, if I forget one, I just kind of put some thoughts down right here on the fly. But if I forget. Oh, okay. A few of them that I was thinking of as you were talking were, I think we need to look at delivery systems of the future, ones that would be as effective, if not more effective, and more efficient that we're doing now. Virtual schools, I'm finding, are growing all over the nation rapidly because they are able to deliver for a lot less money, and they're able to individualize so quickly because of the computer. So if a student is working on the mastery of a skill, they won't be promoted, if you will, to the next skill when they haven't mastered the one. It's automatic individualization. So virtual schools cost less than $6,000 per student on a full curriculum basis compared to, say, the city of St. Louis that is per student $16,000. That's a $10,000 a year savings if we switch to an effective method that's much more efficient. Secondly, there are a number of vacant schools in our districts that also have charters. And for instance, in the city of St. Louis, there are 44 vacant schools. The district, both I understand Kansas City and St. Louis, have worked really hard to not sell those to any competitors like a charter school, charter public school, or any of those. I think we need to deal with that. And lastly, I guess I would point out that only half of our students in the state of Missouri, these aren't just the East and West districts, but throughout the state, only half are proficient in our core subjects. And we have 103,151 students, you've heard me this over and over and over, that actually are assigned to schools in districts that are not fully accredited. And we're also running into, because you can see this coming, 38% of our students who go to college are having to take remedial courses. All those things have huge indirect costs available connected to them. For instance, if you don't know how to read, and a lot of our students are coming out not knowing how to read, not a lot, I don't want to use the word a lot, but some are, then they can't even, it addresses health care. They can't read their meds and how to take them. So that affects our Medicare costs. More students who drop out and don't get a quality education are going to end up on Medicare, and they're going to end up in our prisons. So these indirect costs, not to mention just the importance of that human capital, is very costly to us, and I think we need to look at the remedial cost when we go to our schools. Those end up right on the backs of our parents. And so those are just some things, and maybe I forgot some that I mentioned the other day.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. I think she had three slides up there, Patrick. And then finally, Senator Crowell did address our committee, and I think he also addressed some of the other rebooting committees. I don't know if Senator Crowell is here right now, but he did have some concerns over teacher retirement, and is that fund going to be able to maintain itself over the next few decades? And that's it for the report from the Education Rebooting Committee.
Okay, Senator, I think there was something here about lottery funds. Did you touch
on
those?
That was just a question that somebody had, and Desi was able to answer that.
Okay. Senator Robin Wright Jones.
One quick question for you, Senator Pierce. We were on the 2020 Education Committee over the interim. Did any of those recommendations find their way into the rebooting recommendations? or what? How do we incorporate the two, or do we?
There were some similarities. The academic review process that we felt in the educated citizenry that was brought up, as well as in rebooting, merging the two departments, that was brought up as well. And so I think those were some of the things. Senator Cunningham's concerns about proficiency, that was one target area that we wanted to look at, as far as we want Missouri to not only compare well with the states in the Midwest, but also other countries. And so those were some recurring themes.
Is there anything left on that list that we need to incorporate or create some legislation about? There was a lot of work that went into
that. Oh, yeah, there is.
I wanted to just lay fallow. Mm-hmm. And will we proceed with that? Or?
Well, the educated citizenry, the 2020 committees, I think there's some good blueprints for those of us who are still in the legislature to refer back to. And then with rebooting, I'm sure that there's a lot of plans on how we're going to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, between the rebooting effort and then the 2020 committee, I'd be curious, as kind of a follow-up to a presentation that we had in appropriations this morning, mm-hmm. From our testimony that we took from a Dr. Jones, mm-hmm. That is the superintendent of Blair Oaks R2. And during his testimony, he shared with the committee that out of the 523 districts in the state, that they have the lowest per pupil expenditure.
Around 6,000.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
Around 6,000.
Around 6,000. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question about, you know, what are the how are the results in your district as far as how are they doing on the MAP test? You know, and I'd be curious in the efforts of those looking at education, have we done any studies as far as a direct correlation of amount of money that's spent on an education and the quality of that education?
I believe Dr. Stacy Priest, who's our executive director of the Joint Committee on Education, she has done some, and we have President Pro Tem Mayor has asked to get copies of that, and we can get that information out. In some cases, there was no correlation; others, there was. And so, but you're exactly right. I mean, we need to know that we're getting the most for the money that we're giving, and yet, new dollars or large amounts of money is not always the answer either.
So, on that note, I mean, and I'd like to see, so that study will be made available to all the members.
We can get that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to know if we're looking at, you know, maybe the 20 districts in the state, 10 or 20 districts in the state that are spending the least per student expenditure and are having great results. And if we're looking at that and saying, how are they doing it? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we emulate what's going on in these districts? And maybe, you know, it's a combination of those that are spending the least and some of those that are spending the most, and find out what they're doing in those districts. Mm-hmm. But I think it'd be very interesting,
mm-hmm.
especially in times where we're looking at not being able to fully fund, you know, the formula.
Right.
So, good.
Get that. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you, Senator, and for your hard work and the members of your working group. Some very good. Yes, Senator Cunningham.
One other thing that I wanted to add when I saw the slide. Recently, there was some money added to transportation for the school districts. And I might add on there that one of the problems we're running into transportation-wise, I'd put it under the category of hardship transportation. District boundaries were drawn a long time ago. And since then, many things changed, like Lake of the Ozarks, which was put in. Highways were put in, which makes it complicated to get students to districts and schools to which they're assigned, and more expensive. We've heard from a lot of parents throughout the state that are maybe an hour from their assigned school in their district, but 15 minutes from a school in another district. We are just wasting money on transportation and taking untold time of parents that are not needed when they want to be involved. So I think we need to look at correcting that too.
Okay, thank you, Senator. And now we will go to the social programs and Senator Root. Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This year, we had a couple of small new recommendations. The bulk were continuing to work on recommendations from the previous reboot. We had a lot of big, hairy, audacious goals for that committee last year, some of which we're continuing to work on. So the new ones that came up was there was some information provided to the committee on the growth in the RX program, Missouri RX program. It's grown pretty significantly. Wanted to take a look at what other states have done. What do they provide in their RX program? What types of drugs? Who can benefit? And see what their levels of growth have been in compared to Missouri's. And also take a look at some of the conferences on state legislatures and different associations, because I know they've done interim studies on making recommendations on what other states have done. So that was something that we wanted to take a look at more, but didn't, you know, obviously have much time to do. We had a bunch of emails that came in, not quite as many as last year, but, you know, several hundred. A lot of them generated questions of the departments, to which we have not heard back on all of, on really any of our questions. So we probably will have other things that we want to look at, but we don't have any recommendations until we get specific information on why things are done certain ways that were generated from a lot of taxpayers and employees of the state that see things that make them scratch their head. One of the other thing that came up was we kind of dealt with the overtime issue that we've seen in the newspaper a little bit, along with the on-call status of state employees, how much that is utilized, you know, and the cost savings and different reasonings. But again, we're waiting for a lot of information back from the various departments. The things that we wanted to continue working on from last year, again, number one recommendation from the volume of emails plus our number one recommendation from last year was to continue to look at the state habilitation center reforms. You know, some of these were spending $550 a day per individual to provide care. You know, we in appropriations last year, we dealt with one. We had to close and are transitioning people to the community and waiver-based programs that can save up to or even over $100 a day and provide services in the community. The estimated savings is, you know, upwards of $20 million to the state. So we're continuing to work on that. I know there's legislation that has been filed that came from last year's reboot. So again, that's another recommendation continued from last year. The number two most prevalent thing that was emailed in from constituents and people across the state dealt with child support enforcement. We're still waiting on a lot of information from the department, but it does seem that we are providing services through the state on child support enforcement on behalf of individuals where there's no fee being assessed, where we do assess fees on other segments of the population to provide that type of a service. There is even a lot of questions raised on how efficient the program is, what is our bang for our buck. There was conversations about privatization. I know that they do have contracts on some part of it. But again, just the volume of emails that came in on various different reasons on child support enforcement said that this is definitely something that we have to continue to look at. And again, that also came up last year as well. Another thing that was from last year that came up again this year, which is another recommendation of the committee, is to look to include step-parent income in the the eligibility for MoHealthNet. You know, there is no federal law or any reason besides our own state law that says that we don't have to look at the household income. For example, you know, if Bill Gates lived in Missouri and he was divorced and had stepkids, his kids, you know, could possibly qualify for MoHealthNet because we don't calculate the step parent's income in the household. We only look at the parent. So it might be one of those that we could look at, you know, or is there an income level in the household before we put people on MoHealthNet. Again, that was from last year as well. We talked about division and department consolidation and reform. One of the examples that came up this year, as long as many from last year, was, you know, if like Voc Rehab, there's two separate deals and two separate state agency, DESE and I think a DMH or Social Services. Again, trying to find a single point of entry for people that are utilizing state programs to make it easier for the consumer, make it better to track outcomes from the state, and just make it just much more simple to have one system point of entry rather than three ways to get into the same program versus three different agencies. And then the broader conversation of consolidation of state agencies, which was a recommendation from last year, some of which would need constitutional approval. But again, look at some efficiencies and ease for consumer use and betterment of the taxpayers by having a single point of entry into a lot of state programs.
The estimated savings is unknown on that one. Again, another one that came up in many of the emails was the charging of the fees for licensure of daycare facilities, EMTs, paramedics. Currently we do inspections of daycare facilities. We provide licensing for daycare facilities, but we don't even charge anyone for the license to become licensed, whereas if you're an insurance producer, you have to, pay for your own license in order to open up. And it's not a moneymaker for the state, but it does at least cover the cost of providing that, and that was something that we're continuing to look at from last year. Also from last year that we're going to continue to explore, I know it's been on a topic of conversation a lot in the halls already, was managed care for our age blind and disabled population and managed care across the state. It was number three and four recommendation last year. The conversation is still ongoing, trying to see if there is a cost savings. If it is, how much? Maybe look at a pilot program. So that was one from last year that was a predominant consistent theme throughout the emails that we received. So that's all that your committee has, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Jones?
One quick question, Senator. You mentioned several times that you were awaiting information from some departments. What kind of time frame are we talking about here?
They were very specific, detailed questions on one type of a program or why something is done that way. No major giant themes would come from those questions that arose, but little tiny things that might be tweaked. So I would hope that within the next week, we'd get answers from the departments. But there was interesting things, but would be minuscule in the big picture. But there was a lot of input on, obviously, someone that works for an agency that sees something being done that's not quite smart. So we're trying to get those little things answered, and we'll gladly get those to the rest of the Senate when those come in.
Thank you, Senator, for your work and the work of your working group. Senator Lemke?
Can I inquire?
Sure.
Senator, thank you. Senator, just a couple of questions. I guess second to education, the most GR is found in this area. Is that correct? About $1.5 billion, $1.5 billion. Okay. Do we have any idea what the growth, because of maintenance of effort and just the program growth that's natural because of federal mandates, what the GR responsibility is going to be in these areas?
Dan, can you answer that question? I know that generally, or Adam, I know we look at anywhere from 200 to 350 million in growth in those programs annually. Okay.
So that in just so we make this clear, so when we talk about our decisions that we're going to have to make as far as funding the foundation formula for education, this body has the ability to say the money's not there, and we're going to have to make a difficult decision to maybe not fully fund the formula. But when we come over here to a federally once you're involved and you get in bed with the federal government on this Medicaid program, that the cost drivers, maintenance of effort and the growth in the programs, there's not a choice that we have. Is that correct?
Well, Senator, we're still waiting on some questions, but through the acceptance of the ARRA money, the stimulus, we couldn't make any changes, either increase or decrease eligibility on various different programs while that money was being utilized. That ends this year. Now there is...
In the fiscal 11 budget?
The fiscal 11. So okay. If we wanted to make a change, let's say on the step-parent income, we would have that ability, starting, next year, to where we could possibly make that change. Now there is some questions on the federal health care bill that had passed on the Medicaid piece. On there are, what I've been told, some provisions that we couldn't change eligibility on some programs through 2013. So we're still waiting from the department to try to figure out, okay, what do we have control over, what don't, if this comes through, and we're still waiting on a piece. But some of it we would have control of, again, on this budget year.
But in the Medicaid program, we're already pretty much at the floor, aren't we, as far as our eligibilities?
I think you could possibly go lower, but it would be really, really getting low. But if you wanted to make any changes on any eligibility, on regardless various different things, we were not been able to do that because of the ARRA money. But now we believe that on some we can, but some we might still be handcuffed through 2013, and we're waiting on information from the department on specifically what is available for our decision-making process and what isn't.
Okay. One other question. You brought up the issue of child support collections and the cost that is incurred by the state to enforce what would be a civil judgment by the court. Is that correct? Do you know of any other area where the state follows up in collection practices on a civil judgment by the court? You know how much that we spend on that in our budget? Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schaaf.
Hi. I'd like to just inquire of Senator Roop.
Certainly.
You know, as I recall, the department said there would be very little savings from things like putting the ABD population on managed care and expanding managed care. Isn't that correct?
The department really was unsure. They said in the first year there would probably be minimal, if any, savings. And then the second year they were still calculating it out.
Well, there are some things on the recommendations from last year, such as putting the ABD population on managed care, extending managed care throughout the state, and the False Claims Act piece that I have real serious concerns about. I just hate to see our committee put that out as something that we endorse. And
what you saw was you didn't see the I didn't mention the False Claims Act, because that was something that was generally thought of is once we got into it, it wasn't that viable of a savings. The managed care piece I mentioned last because it was a recommendation of the previous year, and there's still a lot of questions that are unanswered on what the true possible savings would be. So I didn't include it as a new recommendation, but a reiteration that there's conversations going on about this. There's people have already been talking about it, so it's something that probably will be revisited.
I'm not really familiar with the process of how this goes, being my first time and all, but I would suggest that those items just be removed off of it, because you know, there was a lot of fear about those things, and I didn't hear a lot of support for it, but that's just my feeling.
Well, we only put up the new recommendations, and in your packet you'll see that you had two new recommendations this year, and then continuing to act previous recommendations is, I think, just a blanket that all of them have gone in.
Right, that's the part that kind of concerned me. Anyway.
I'm sure everyone in this room has one little thing on one of those from the previous year that is something that they might not
right.
Look forward to.
Thank you, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Chairman.
Thank you.
Certainly. We'll move forward, and Senator Lemke will present on general government and the Office of Administration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our work group was charged with, again, looking at general government and the Office of Administration. For those that didn't have the opportunity to sit in on our hearings, that actually deals with the areas of revenue, the Office of Administration, elected officials, the General Assembly, and real estate. It it takes in about 4.35 cents of every dollar that we spend in state government, and the GR dollars that are connected with those areas is approximately $400 million. And the committee, you know, thought it was important for us to share with those that sat in on our hearings that in last year's rebooting effort, we identified 90 to $113 million worth of savings if we were able to implement everything that our committee came up with. That would represent, you know, roughly 25% of those GR dollars that are connected with this area of state government, which even for, you know, my inclinations as far as what I think about the role of government is a pretty hefty cut. You know, so I think that coming into this year, you know, after addressing, you know, a lot of low-hanging fruit in last year's budget, our goal would be able to accomplish, if we're able to find 10% worth of savings within this $400 million, that would even be, you know, pretty aggressive. So the recommendations that you have in front of you, most of those, the departments and appropriations are still working on the numbers as far as what kind of savings we could realize out of these changes and these recommendations. So I'm sorry to say that we don't have any, you know, hard numbers on any of these except for a couple, a few. But we will be pursuing these different things. I think a lot of I think we had over 300 emails that came to our work group. And there was a certain amount of duplication in what was presented to us, but I thought a lot of very good ideas. The other thing that I think is important for the public to know is that the effort of restructuring state government in Missouri has not been undertaken since the Bond administration in 73. So I think it's very timely in this era of very tight budgets that this is something that we're looking at as far as restructuring state government, the inner workings of state government here in the state of Missouri. So I will run through these recommendations, Mr. Chairman, and we'll be available for any questions. The first recommendation, and this did come up last year, but not in our group, was moving to one license plate. And this does have an estimated savings of about $1 to $1.5 million. Next is, and this came in relation to travel across the state agencies. And interestingly enough, I really believe that we had a lot of state employees that wanted to bring it to the attention of the legislature that there's a lot of unnecessary travel that goes on. And I had the opportunity of participating in where the Department of OA brought us in to take a look at the teleconferencing that they've made an investment in and the technology that's available. So currently, the state has in the Truman Building, in the Wainwright Building in St. Louis, and then in the Fletcher Daniel Building in Kansas City, the ability for us to have teleconferencing. And the committee believes it's important for us to look across state government in ways of utilizing this new technology so that we have less travel and the associated cost with all that travel. In that this technology allows you to be sitting in three different parts of the state, and it's almost like sitting in the same room and having a meeting. So this is something that I think that we need to continue.
Senator, let me interrupt. I think Senator Dempsey has a comment.
Does this mean if Governor Nixon were to stay at home and watch the Tigers game that the state would save money?
Yes, it would.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. This is an interesting recommendation, and again, I think it came from you know, many of our state employees that have seen the downsizing of our number of employees that we have across state government. And what they said was important for us to do is look at the ratios of deputy directors, assistant directors, and middle managers in relation to the amount of state employees that we have. Have those ratios coincided with the downsizing of our number of employees across state government? And that's something that we're going to be looking very closely at. We had a number of emails that talked about a four-day work week, and we're going to look at what the savings would be if we were able to do that in all areas except for those institutions, which are 24/7, that would not allow us to go to a four-day work week.
Senator.
Yes, Senator.
About 2 years ago, I did a bunch of research on that issue. The state of Utah went to a four-day work week, and there's been enough information to show that it has been quite successful for the state. They've saved on energy costs of turning the lights off in the building. Parents have saved on child care costs of not having to send their kid to the daycare one day a week. Some offices are open longer, so people don't have to take off work to go get state services. I gave that proposal to the governor about 2 years ago, and I think he's still studying it. He hasn't gotten back to me yet, but I think it's I think it is an issue that we ought to look into, and I think the cost savings are pretty eye opening. And I can share that study with members of the committee if they're interested.
Thank you, Senator. Really like to see that. You know, on that note, number of emails came in and said, well, why doesn't the legislature, quit taking a spring break, all right, you know, so we can save that money? And staff quickly said, well, it actually saves money when we're not here. So, you know, so that on that note, I mean, the idea...
You're saying shorten our legislative session?
Yeah, that probably makes sense, too. So, I mean, on that note, you know, it certainly would make sense that if those buildings weren't occupied, if we didn't have the electricity, we didn't have all those associated costs.
Right. When they started talking about it, it was when gas was almost up to $5 a gallon, and it was an executive order by the governor of Utah. And the amount of money that state employees saved in fuel costs, too, was pretty eye-opening. So.
Right. Okay, good.
What was the effect on providing services to the citizens of Missouri?
Well, as the senator said, crucial state services you wouldn't shut down. Those would still be 5 days a week. Department of Revenue, those would go to 4 days, but they would have extended hours so people could go after work instead of taking time off work. But a lot of administrative offices that are not crucial day to day, they're still going to be working 40 hours. They're just going to do it in 4 days instead of five.
And of course, adjustments could be made, such as what a year or two ago we had, which we see today, a high rate of unemployment, and there were some difficulties in claimants filing right. their claims, and so
yeah,
could be adjustments made. Obviously.
I mean, it gets pretty detailed when you get into what services those are because state governments are so big. But I think overall, it. Actually, the state workers were pretty pessimistic when this idea came about. After 2 years, they polled all the state workers, and about 90% of them say it's been tremendous for them, and they appreciated it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
The next recommendation, and again, we had a number of emails on this, was the idea of taking a look at what the state spends on postage. And, it was an eye-opener that this one individual said, you know, there's no reason that this piece of mail should be coming to this office and not using, interagency mail with a 44-cent stamp on it. You know, so, again, everything adds up, and I think that this is something that we need to take a good look at. The use of state vehicles and the idea of using those vehicles for commuting and then also on the weekends. It came up that there were a lot of state vehicles being used, taken home, and then used for private use on the weekends. So I think that we have to take a comprehensive look, across the board, how state vehicles are being used. And again, this gets back into travel also. And what came out of this discussion also was the way that the travel expenses that we as senators and our colleagues on the other side of the building actually are using our travel expenses within district. You know, take a look at that. It's one thing for our travel costs to and from the Capitol, but you know, what are the costs to the taxpayers of those travel costs within district? So we're going to be taking a look at that. Next was the cell phone use to state employees, and you know, who we're giving telephones to, and what we're reimbursing them, and what the cost is to the state for cell phones. Another one that came up, I thought was very interesting, was different state agencies and what they're paying for advertising and for sponsorships of different television and radio programs. So we're going to take a look at that. We had some recommendations to look at, and this goes back to the pro tem's talk about you know, maybe a shorter legislative session. There was a time that we had a shorter legislative session, and then the idea that maybe looking at, you know, budgeting for a two-year, you know, budget. And would that address this idea of agency rushing at the end of the budget year to spend everything that we had appropriated? The idea, would they be able to possibly roll over, you know, that into their into the second year of the budget cycle? So it's interesting, and I think it's something that that we is worthwhile looking into. I don't know if this directly relates to our area, certainly indirectly, but there was some talk about consolidation of counties, of prosecutor systems, of judicial circuits, and, of course, in the education area, in school districts. I mean, whenever we consolidate, you know, and when you go through the budget process, you can think of different things where the state actually subsidizes what is going on in the 114 counties, you know, and, you know, across our state. So the idea of consolidation in any of those areas is going to ultimately save us dollars, you know, GR dollars, you know, to our budget. Something that's been ongoing and continues to be a hot button for me is the consolidation and of state office space, whether it's state office space that we own or lease, the continuing to analyze our lease agreements across the state, and making sure that you know, in this changing economy, that we're paying the market rate in these leases, and that the taxpayers aren't getting fleeced. You know, and I think this is something that needs to be looked at on an ongoing basis, not something that you look at you know, last year and then don't look at it again for 10 years. You know, it's a very fluid market out there. And, you know, there is, they have to be, you know, these landlords have to be able to sharpen their pencils because of all the empty space that's out there. So the state, with the taxpayers' dollars, shouldn't be paying a premium for space, because we're a pretty good tenant. So we're going to be looking and continuing to look at savings that we can achieve there.
Senator, I'm curious. I had some private companies approach me with the idea that they would come in and manage the operation and maintenance of state buildings and properties, and were willing to do that and issue a large check to the state of Missouri if we would be willing to enter into a 50 to 30 year agreement to allow them to manage our state properties and buildings, and then continue to appropriate roughly, I think it is about $82 or $83 million annually to them, and also they were willing to put up like $200 to $300 million to take care of back maintenance work on our properties.
Deferred maintenance. Right.
Did they come before the committee?
They did, Senator, and they made a presentation. There were a lot of questions asked, particularly by Senator Crowell, that were not able to be answered, and that information would be forthcoming. So it's something we're going to continue, you know, to look at and pursue. But a lot of unanswered questions as far as how that would how that process would work.
Okay.
A couple of the questions that came up were, where are you doing this in other states, and what's the track record? And they've just recently, I think, gone into contract maybe with California.
They have.
Right? And they really don't have much of a track record there. Now, they have done some business with Canada, with some of their provinces, and so we're waiting to get that okay. information back.
Okay.
So it's something we're going to continue to explore.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Again, when you look at, we talked about, you know, consolidation of counties, but we also talked about is it necessary for reassessments of property across the state to be done every 2 years? So, you know, is there a cost savings there? Are there cost savings in, you know, the elections that we have, the amount of polling places, the idea of, you know, in many areas of the state, the amount of different polling places is based on a population that is not static and has changed, and where areas of the state where we've lost population, do we need to have as many polling places? Every polling place, you have to have so many ballots printed, and you have to have so many machines there. So, you know, to look across the board there and see if there's any consolidation that can be done there. This was interesting. This has happened in other states, and that's privatizing the state lottery and the ability, again, to go and get a commitment from a private company to actually write the check, a check to the state, you know, that would give us, you know, cash in hand. We're going to look into that and see what the pluses and minuses are as far as the ability to generate revenue that way. A number of emails came in from different agencies that wanted us to look at our policies as far as using Missouri Vocational Enterprises for, you know, the different agencies to have to give them a preference as far as buying there. They had complaints about their prices being high, so we're looking into you know, what their margins are and how they establish and the setting of their prices for the things that they make and sell. We're looking at across the board on state publications and what we're spending, and especially in this era when a lot of people can get these type of things online. You know, what are we spending on printing costs, you know, across state government? Yes, Senator.
Could you explain to me a little bit more about the Missouri Vocational Enterprises purchasing requirement?
Well, you know, Senator, I really don't. I'm not an expert on this, but it's my understanding that there is a policy in place that to where you have to, you know, when you go out and buy something, you have to give preference to there. I guess
that's right.
Yes,
unless they don't make.
Okay.
And so what we heard was that on many of these items, they're more expensive than being able to go out and buy it from a private business, you know, that would certainly benefit, you know, small business people in Missouri. So we're trying to get all of that information back. As
okay, so those and the, are those the products that are manufactured by?
By the prisoners.
Okay, all right. That's,
yes.
That's
Is that what you
I
want
thought.
To know? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And then that would pretty much wrap it up, Mr. Chairman, except that we're going to continue to look at previous recommendations that were made last year by our work group and continue to get more information on what kind of savings that we can anticipate.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. A lot of good work. Senator Parson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, question. Senator, one thing that last year I got into a little bit was on the health insurance of state employees. And if you're a retired state employee, your health insurance, 65% of your health insurance is paid for life if you're a fully invested retired employee. A question that would be, I guess, looking into it if you would, at 65, when most people go on Medicare rolls, they don't have two insurance policies going. You normally get a supplement that the private sector out there does. And I think the state needs to look into why would we be paying anybody a lifetime premium in health insurance. And I think they should be required to do a supplement, or at least a supplement, instead of paying a full price premium for life on that. I think that's an area that we really need to look into, and I think that could be a significant savings to the state.
Sir. Right. We'll take a look at that. Thank you.
Senator Ridgeway.
In going back over the things that, because I also served on this committee, that that we don't want to forget from last year, we've got a real problem with contracts and bidding in our state, because I can use an example right now where that a lot of our outdoor furniture for our state parks and different things like that that are used by the state of Missouri, those manufacturing jobs are actually going out of the state, and we're paying to support out-of-state manufacturing jobs when we already have two manufacturers in Missouri, one in my district and one in the senator from Lawrence's district, that can provide exactly the same materials at or below the current contract price. But yet they've chosen intentionally to contract with someone who's in Indiana. I'm all for Indiana, but I'd rather keep those manufacturing jobs here in Missouri. So that's not making any sense. And secondly, to follow up with regard to the consolidated health care system, as Senator Dempsey knows, I have repeatedly tried to work with, very cooperatively, make presentations to the Missouri Consolidated Health Care Board to try to draw them into the 21st century with regard to health care for our employees. They still do not have a quality, affordable, high deductible health care plan coupled with an HSA that the individual employee owns and can roll over from year to year. To say that they've been passive aggressive with regard to that was probably an understatement. But we've just simply got to pull that in line. It's a huge money sink, and it's also costing our employees a ridiculous amount of money that they could put a lot of that money over into an HSA. So I plan on having some legislation in that regard, and I would encourage any involvement from the members possible to try to make that happen.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Jones.
Thank you. I would just like to add into what you were saying about printing costs. That's a real issue for me. We spend a lot of time printing slick, glossy folders, tricolor information, pamphlets, a lot of premium items, even lottery stop, but it seems like they're back, and we're just not in a financial position to continue to support that. And I would also go so far as to say that any agency that receives dollars from the state, that they become very prudent about what they print and hand out. Because when we get people coming in our offices, we get folder after folder after folder after folder. Reduce it to a palm card. We all run for campaigns. Reduce it to a palm card with your name, your agency, and your website, and drive it to the website where it's free. Now, I understand everybody doesn't have that access, but we need to reduce it dramatically. I think it would save a lot of money on our end and on the end of the agencies that are receiving the dollars that we're giving them. That way they may not have to ask for so much. It's overkill, and we really need to cut back on it.
Thank you, Senator, for that comments. Any other questions of Senator Lemke, Senator Lager?
It's more of just kind of a general government question. Is, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, all the stuff we're talking about here is great. I mean, saving on stamps, whatever. But if we're going to get to the numbers we're talking about, I mean, we're talking about a serious restructuring. Has there been any discussion, or I don't know if it's here or where it would be, about a real commitment to implementing technology? And I want to be clear, it's technology implementation to replace employees. It's what every company has done over the last decade. And, you know, one of the things that my understanding from the Utah situation is one of the reasons they were so successful in their four-day work week was because they really ramped up on their implementation of technology to get there. And that's what allowed them to go to the 4 days, was they were more reliant on technology to get a lot of those things done, where people could do it either web-based or in an after-hours setting. And my assessment of where we are here is if we don't have a solid, very real discussion about what technology is available and a substantial investment in technology, I don't think we can nibble around the edges to get done what happened over the next 2 years. I don't know if there's been any discussion. I'm just curious.
Well, I think that we have to take a serious look at IT consolidation and have a sit down and find out, you know, how is this benefiting, you know, the structure of our state government. And I mean, Senator, you know, frankly, I that's why I started out the way I did. I'm a firm believer that we have to restructure state government, okay? But I don't think that it's realistic that we find the amount of savings that we need to find, you know, to balance the budget as we're constitutionally required to do in this area.
Right.
Okay? Doesn't mean we don't need to do it. We need to do it, but we have to realize that to get to the number we need to get to, it's not going to be found in simply firing state employees.
No, not in that, not in your one little budget bill there. But I mean, if you figure the average employee costs between $40,000 and $50,000 with benefits, everything included.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you eliminate 10,000 state employees through the use of technology, that's almost $500 million. And it's not going to be any one department. It's going to be a little bit everywhere, and it's going to happen in every one of our districts. But I would be shocked to find a company that's gone through any major restructuring in this economy that did not impact their workforce by 15% to 20%, and that's all we're really talking about.
Just one more point: if we don't, you know, take a frank look at the way that we do business, okay, then there's no place else for us to go than, like you said, across the board and looking at state employees. If we continue on a path where the federal government directs us to increase a program that we have no control over by $300 million a year. Well, then if we're going to continue to do business that way, how are we ever going to make the numbers work? If we allow a resolution to go through that mandates this General Assembly that we raise the salaries of judges by $5 million, then there has to be a corresponding cut someplace else.
We're on the same page on entitlements, but the reality is my only point in my question was more of it, has there even been this discussion, whether it's at the appropriate level or in your committee here, and that is, at some point, we have to have a real discussion about high-level restructuring, whether it's a four-day work week, whether it's what do we do today that we no longer are going to do going forward. And
yes.
I'm not seeing that yet.
I think the beginning of those discussions are happening. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Senators, for that commentary. And now Senator Stouffer is going to present on several different items of discussion.
Thank you, Senator. We had four departments in that we looked at in our committee. Start out with agriculture. We have a number of laws that say that they have to keep hard copies of invoices, purchasing orders, inspections, and reports. A brand book is somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 or 5 inches thick. I think it would be very appropriate to allow them to keep electronic copies. Instead of having right now they make electronic transactions and then they have to make a paper copy of that, and then that has to be filed and stored. And I think it's time that we upgrade our requirements to the point where we can go to electronic copies. I think that would bring us some saving throughout. Also, tort reform in agriculture. Once you have been compensated for a nuisance, then that should be it. And what we have now, we've got one company that's having the third and fourth tier of lawsuits coming back for the same nuisance. And I think that's something that we definitely have to address in agriculture. A few years ago, farmers or livestock producers were fleeing from Illinois and Iowa to come to Missouri. And today we see just the opposite. So I think it's time that we look at some of those restrictions. We had a lot of comments about Department of Natural Resources. One is that they're looking at trying to do some of their general permits that they do every day online and allow that to happen. There were a number of emails talking about the layers of decision making in DNR, as many as six layers, almost to the point where a decision is impossible to make because they simply can't get through the process. I understand that some of that's being corrected, but the inability to make a decision in DNR is a real concern for everybody. I didn't count the emails, but that was the bulk of it. had the state land survey folks came to me, and they are charged an administration fund by DNR, an administration fee. And that fee has, in 1995 was $57,000. Last year it was $408,000. It appears that they feel like that they're being mined out of business. That it's kind of hard to justify those administration costs. I understand that it's been done over a long period of time, but I think it's certainly something that needs to be looked at. I was told that a lot of it had to do with efficiencies, and these folks have been about efficiency out of business. They're going to be unable to maintain the records that they're required to maintain. There was a $100,000 increase between 2008 and 2009. Actually, a $110,000 increase between 2008 and 2009. Some of this seems to be a little bit overkill, and one of the suggestions was that we move that fund out of DNR and maybe into DED or some other appropriate spot. They had the feeling that they're just being mined and not receiving services for it, and you know, it was attributed to IT and what have you, but the truth of the matter is their projects never get to the top. So it's something I thought we ought to look at. There was a suggestion that DNR's business is about correcting pollution and problems. There was a suggestion that maybe permitting process be moved out of DNR into DED, since basically it was checking the box and what have you. Just a suggestion that came in on the emails. Department of Transportation, probably their number one, is eliminating the binding arbitration. This is the only department in state government in Missouri that we require that the plaintiff can choose binding arbitration, and the department has no recourse. I mean, they're bound under that. They're the only DOT in the nation that has that bind. And what happens is, if you have a weak case, you ask for binding arbitration. If you have a strong case, you go to jury trial. And all they're asking for, they're not eliminating binding arbitration. What they are eliminating, asking for, is the ability to go to trial. If there's a weak case, they'd like to take it before a jury. And it makes a lot of sense. There's numbers running around probably $1 to $2 million. Prior to this being implemented, their legal rewards that they had to pay out was $4 million. Today it's $12 million. So I'll let make a decision on that. The other two things they brought up, and they're not arbitrating. I mean, they're not. They just want to let us know that they're available. With the DWBI law that we had last year, we got out of compliance with federal law. They are now forced to take $16 million out of the road fund and put it into the safety fund because of being out of compliance. They were not advocating we change it. They just wanted to make us aware of that. It's something that we need to look at and decide whether we can get back in compliance or whether we're happy with what it is. The open container law is the same thing. I've never been in on those conversations, but that's another $16 million that goes from the road fund to the safety fund. Now, so those are two things they suggested we look at. They weren't advocating one way or the other, but just to make us aware of that. But that's $32 million that is being taken away from road construction and going into the mileage signs on the side of the highway, what have you, which I get a lot of emails about that too.
Senator McKenna, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a quick question. Does MoDOT have the authority to use highway funds for safety improvements like barrier cables and or the cables or barrier walls?
There is a safety portion to their allocation. When we get out of compliance with a federal law, then they require more. They require that instead of going to road fund, they
go to
safety.
Well, I guess my question is this a wash because MoDOT was spending highway money on barrier cables and walls, and now they can take that money that they were spending there because it's dedicated to $16 million from those two fixes? Is that clear?
I understand.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
the diversion for this past, for what we did last year hasn't, I mean, that just affects this year. So you're not, this is not about raiding the safety fund. It's just a question of whether we want to get them back in compliance. And again, they weren't advocating one way or the other. Right. They were just wanting us to look at it or make us aware of it. Okay. All right.
Say that again.
Senator, we draw down so much federal money by being in compliance with drug courts,
right,
primary seatbelt, what have you. That federal
texting
money.
Texting, maybe.
Texting, maybe. That federal money comes down and it can be used for a variety of purposes. Now they're saying you can't use it for roads. You have to use it for safety because you're out of compliance because we don't have a statewide open container law. And we went too strict on the DWI and it became out of, we became out of compliance with the federal law.
Okay.
So that money can't be used for roads. Until
but can road money be used for safety?
My understanding is no, that the road money that we collect has to go to
construction roads only, not to barrier cables. And
right.
Okay.
This is not a campaign against barrier cables, by the way.
No. I'm just wondering if it's kind of a wash because you were spending money out of the road fund for safety, and if...
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think this is taking money out of the road fund and putting it into a different fund.
Senator Dempsey has some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I heard that right, that we're out of compliance because our DWI law is too strict?
It's too strict. And again, they weren't advocating we make the change. They have got recommendations that will get us back in order, and I think it's just something for us to look at. Do we want to go there, or do we want to leave it to where it is?
Is that, would there be any way to petition the federal government? Would it be a regulatory change, or would they actually have to change federal law? I mean, it just, that has to not be their intent to punish us for being strict on
DWI. I think their intent is, now that we passed a law like this, to implement it and to educate the public about it. That's what the safety issue is. You're gonna encourage the public not to drive drunk. So now you are forced, based on the legislation that we passed last year, to educate the public.
No, we have surpassed the requirements of the we've gone too far in the mind of the federal government, and they are punishing Missouri by taking money out. It's just like the open container law there.
Well, but the open container is one where, I mean, basically their policy is, you know, you're not going to be able to spend that money on construction. We're only going to allow you to spend it on safety,
right?
As long as you continue to not pass an open container law. And I think that's different. I think they want a policy where we restrict. They want to see a law on open container. I can't believe that they actually want looser restrictions on DWI. I mean,
we can get you. My understanding is it's
nobody from
that we went beyond what.
I mean, they're not out there, I would think, advocating for drunk drivers. I would hope. I mean, I don't even have to have the answer to that question. I mean, but I'm just asking if there's a way to get federal relief instead of us having to make a change to our law.
Well, I'll get you the information.
They did tell us that we can tweak last year's law without changing the overall intent of it.
Not, right.
They didn't get into detail about that. But I think we... What?
It's MoDOT.
Yeah, it was... what's his name? Dave Nichols.
Yeah. And again, certainly, they weren't advocating. They just wanted to let us know it was there. Single license plates has come up again this year, and I'm sure will be addressed. I'm not sure that the savings is what we thought it was last year. We'd have to destroy several million dollars worth of inventory. And then the question is where we're at. But it certainly needs to be looked at. Information technology, I've heard that in every committee so far, and that came up, and that was a general recommendation throughout all divisions. And also the ability to bid out IT work. I hear continuously through email and other that the state takes for years to develop
the new programs, and it could be done in 3 months and over with. So I think that's something that may need some attention. We had one senator brought up something about a four-day work week, piled me full of a whole bunch of research that he'd done. I can't imagine where that came from, but that's on the list. And then there is a real desire to allow Mosiers to make the investment decisions for Empers. And it is something that really needs to be addressed. We've got one group that's doing a tremendous job, and last year had a 14% return on their investment, which was way above market. And you have another group that is coming up way short. And this, we're leaving money on the table. We need to address this. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of Senator Stouffer? Seeing none, thank you. Senator Lemke has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, where are we in the process of the incentives that we pay for making biodiesel?
We didn't look at that, Senator. I don't know where we are. My guess is, I think I haven't seen the numbers, but my impression is that there was very little biodiesel made last year because of the federal program. I think there's the ability to fire that back up this year since they passed the program.
Well, we appropriated $13.3 million to it last year.
Did they spend it?
I don't know.
I don't either.
Just know what they appropriated.
Somebody behind you saying no.
Adam, do you know the situation on biodiesel and ethanol? And I know, as Senator Stouffer spoke about just a moment ago, that the federal government did not implement some incentives for quite some time. And so I'm guessing maybe, I don't know if they're going to expend all $11 million this year or not. Do you know? Okay. And we only have, what, one more ethanol facility that we're obligated to pay? And then in 14, we have no further obligation at this time to the ethanol facilities. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of Senator Stouffer? We have one in the back. Senator Cunningham.
I think you can.
I believe the state of Missouri already does that.
Yeah.
Senator, one question I had, and I don't think there was anything mentioned about the Department of Conservation, but I had an organization that approached me about opening up state forest land for pay to allow them to come in and harvest timber out of some of our state forest land, and they would pay the Department of Conservation or the state, and this would be allowed under strict guidelines set forth by the Department of Conservation. I don't know if that's possible or plausible, or
I don't know, and I will be honest. The representative of the conservation department was there was telling me how much good they were doing, and I cut him off pretty quick because I want to know what we could do for them, not what they were doing. So it was a pretty short
presentation.
It is certainly something that could be looked at.
I understand that the state of Missouri has over 400,000 acres of forest lands, and I think there's certain cutting restrictions and guidelines that could be followed that would actually be good forest management practices.
I agree with you, Senator.
Okay. Any other questions of Senator Stouffer? Seeing none, we will now move on to Senator Goodman has a presentation. Senator? And you got your own fan club with you today.
Yeah, the only way I get one is to bring my own. Thank you, Mr. President. We're going to talk about courts, corrections, and public safety. And I'll tell you up front, Senator Bartle last year was very, very thorough and innovative in his leadership of this work group, and we don't really have any new recommendations beyond what he did last year. We did maybe flesh out a little more detail on some of his suggestions from last year, but I'll just run through again what we had and share a little bit of the input that we got. Some of the, and I will also add that most of the emails that we received in that working group this year were on the same points that we received last year, so there really wasn't a push there to go anywhere new either. First bullet is sentencing reform, getting the right mix in our state prison system. Chief Justice Price and some others spoke about the success of the drug courts that we're having. He indicated to us that because of the success of drug courts and the number of defendants that they have been able to deal with through that alternative diversion program, they have not had to pursue the construction of two entire prisons. So sometimes we don't see the savings that we just haven't had to spend, and we are continuing to look for ways to reduce the prison population, but there has been a success already in that endeavor, and most 82 or 84, if I recall correctly, of the counties in Missouri have an operating successful drug court program that allows folks to come out with a much lower recidivism rate and breaks their cycle of addiction by, you know, putting them with some community supports and people that are going to encourage them and continue to hold them accountable. And they do have repercussions for failure, but it doesn't take them out of the effort to make their lives better. There was discussion of also going in the direction of some family drug courts where a combination of drug issues and custody issues could be addressed. DWI courts were talked about. There are two veterans courts, I understand, running in the state now to help streamline some issues for returning veterans. And there was discussion of the proposal of reentry drug courts, which we don't, if I understand correctly, have at this point. But that would be an alternative at the end of someone's prison sentence to maybe let them out a little earlier, return jurisdiction back to the courts instead of probation and parole, and have them go through a program similar to drug courts as they are reentering the communities to help ensure that the recidivism is reduced and that they don't revert to the drug-using practices that led to some of the other crimes. There was discussion again this year of increasing criminal fines. That hasn't been done since maybe the 70s, I can't recall when, but it's been a very long time, and I think it's certainly justifiable to let those who are breaking the law step up some and help pay for the cost of enforcing it. There's discussion of increasing the revenues to the prison canteen fund. I won't go in again to the modified work week conversation. We had a pretty thorough coverage of that by Senator Lemke. We didn't have much conversation this year about consolidating certain ALJ and departmental hearing officer positions. We talked about that last year, and I will be in communication with Senator Bartle to see how far they got with some of their investigation and see where we might need to dig back in and pick up on moving some of these things. Creating a permanent internet-based system for state employees to submit suggestions for reducing waste and increasing efficiency, I think, is a great idea. You know, we've done this rebooting twice now, and I suspect that, at least for the group that I've been working on, the majority of the emails that we received were actually, it appeared to be, whether it was on the face of the email or judging from the content that they sent us, suggestions that came from state workers who saw ways that things could be made better. Creating incentives for counties to cooperate and combine public services. We didn't get into a lot of detail about that, but it goes with some of the things that Senator Lemke talked about, as does the next bullet. You know, anytime you talk about consolidating departments, it needs to be done carefully and with study, and not as a result of, you know, one or two working meetings. But I think those are things that we continue to look at and see how that can best be done. We did hear reports from the Highway Patrol on the merger with Highway Patrol and Water Patrol. That seems to be going smoothly so far. And then last year, we did pass the relocation of alcohol. I've forgotten the name of the department. Liquor control. But we didn't really hear much of an update on that. That pretty shortly is what we talked about.
Senator, did anyone with the courts or anyone discuss with you the implementation of online filings of legal documents?
Yes.
And how that might create savings?
Actually, Chief Justice Price mentioned three things that he got into a little more detail on this year that he thought could possibly be cost savers, and the third he recognized was much more controversial. But the first is improving efficiency through automation. They have the plan. They've, you know, the kind of stumbling block there is that it requires some pretty hefty upfront appropriations. They think that in a not too long term, it justifies itself that money would be spent. Secondly, they asked for more flexibility in appropriations, similar to the lump sum budgeting that was done back when you and I were both House members. Allow them.
Actually, we allowed that last year.
Right. And I think they kept their, from what I understand,
I
kept their commitment on that.
Work because earlier Senator Lemke had talked about all that low-hanging fruit that we were able to cut last year, and I guess because of my limitations, I was not able to get higher up on the tree. But go ahead. That's supposed to be funny, but...
When you sit in the middle seat, when you say it's funny, we all laugh.
Yeah, well, that's not necessary. Go ahead. It's not good. Yes. Don't laugh.
It was discussed, and I understand that they were pretty successful in prioritizing within the courts. And the third and more controversial proposal, which they were not advocating nor condemning, just mentioning as a possibility that is sometimes discussed, is centralizing and regionalizing the court system, which again sort of goes into what Senator Lemke was discussing. And we've had an interim committee on that some years ago that I served on when I was a House member, and you get into concerns from some of the rural counties that they won't have as easy of geographic access to some of the needs for warrants and the holds and things like that. But, you know, we always need to be looking at changes with technology and how some consolidations might happen.
Any questions of the senator? Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, were there any emails that directed your committee to in the area of corrections on one topic, the cost of health care to the prisoners?
We actually had a fairly detailed, and I think the gentleman is here. I asked ahead of time for corrections to come and give sort of a justification of every dollar per day that we spend on every inmate, and he gave a fairly thorough presentation. Obviously, if we had more time and it wasn't in the context of sort of a brainstorming working group, we probably would have dug in and asked some more probing questions and required more information back, but I think there may be a committee where that can appropriately happen.
Okay.
But there was conversation about the cost of health care, which was I thought he said $12 a day, and it's a contract, a flat rate contract, so that if you have an inmate who requires $200,000 to be spent in a year, $12 a day covers them, just as it would the inmate that has to have no medical care whatsoever.
Right. But that contract, or I think we have two contracts, actually, one for health care and then mental health.
They are separate.
And I think we've got a...
Does health care expire in 2 years or 1 year? 3.5 more years?
And the idea that it's $12 a day, you know, that... It's nice to break it down that way, but it's $127 million a year.
Well, I understand.
For 30,000 prisoners, and that's doesn't include the mental health contract. I guess one of the things that I'd like to see us take a closer look at is this telemedicine idea and the ability for us to use technology again, so that a lot of the costs that aren't in that $127 million, that when we're talking about health care for our prisoners, is the idea of getting them back and forth to the health care provider, which takes, I think, two guards to accompany them, and then the travel cost and everything else.
And
so
the risk of transporting prisoners.
Everything that's involved with
it's
that the cost associated. Yeah. So I really believe that, you know, we've got to look at this, you know, in great depth as far as there may be some real cost savings there.
We viewed the working group as a starting point, and I did ask that they come. I asked them ahead of time to come in with that detailed breakdown per day. I thought I would get... I do better when I have things itemized on that sort of a scale. If I get the lump sum for the year, then I end up with a lot of questions about, you know, where does it break down smaller? I thought I could extrapolate out with that information. But I certainly agree with you. In the rural communities, telemedicine has been very successful in other settings, and I think it's an obvious thing that we should look at.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Wright Jones.
Senator, three things real quickly. On your sentencing reform, you talked about the mix, the right mix in the state prison system. Go through that again for me.
What we discussed was the need to, you know, continue incarcerating violent offenders and those that pose a greater risk to society. But experience so far has proven that the drug courts and some of the alternatives to those that are there because of substance abuse problems are more productive at cutting recidivism, at getting the offender through rehabilitation and productively working and paying into the tax system instead of having to be a dependent consumer of the tax dollar, and being happier and more productive in society. And it's actually much cheaper to take them through these programs in their communities, better for their families. If they've got children they need to be supporting and working, they can still work while they're doing this. But it wasn't based on any sort of demographics. It was just mix of offenses.
Okay, and to the end, being a productive citizen, what kind of discussion did you have about vendors? Because the vendor list to the Department of Corrections, massive. How many of our vendors are actually taking our paroled inmates or any of our inmates that have been released and employing them? Because they're making a lot of money off the state.
We didn't, I don't recall much discussion of that, but that's certainly something that you could lead an inquiry into.
Absolutely. On the criminal fines, you speak of an increase. How are we collecting those from the inmates at this point? And how would they go about, you know, paying for an increase?
The increase in fines, I think, would mostly be from those who are not incarcerated. It would be those that are fined instead, and they pay those through the courts, through the clerk's office.
Okay, and one last question on the increase on the canteen revenue. Inmates make X amount of dollars monthly. Would their income go up in order to?
Probably,
how is that going to balance?
Probably not. A lot of them, and I'll ask the gentleman from Corrections to correct me if I'm misstating this, a lot of them get deposits made into their canteen account by family members and their support network back home. And we didn't talk about amounts of increase. And actually, that conversation was sort of carried over from last year. So this year, we didn't talk in specifics about what the raises would be.
Thank you.
Any other senator have questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, and some very legitimate and recommendations there. Now we'll go to Senator Lager. He's going to talk about taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our committee looked at tax structure, and specifically what we talked about was incentive structure as well as optimal tax policy and tax structure going forward. There were four things we came up with, and then really those kind of fall into two themes, which I'll close with. The first one is the legislature should give serious consideration to the governor's commission's recommendation on tax credit reviews, tax credit reform, specifically in the area of looking to streamline the process and make the programs less cumbersome. One of the things that we heard is about how when we go through or when DED goes through and puts forward a proposal in terms of an incentive package, their proposal will literally be, you know, 25 pages long, where other states like Kansas may be a page and a half. And the difference is, you know, we have 60-plus programs we're trying to utilize bits and pieces of, where other states may only have a handful of programs but have greater flexibility within that. And clearly that's becoming a challenge as we move forward. That was number one. Number two is right now I think being led by DED is the Missouri Strategic Initiative for Economic Growth. And specifically what they've done is they've identified areas where our state should be very competitive, and they're building strategic plans and tactical plans around how to move those forward, both from an executional perspective, from an incentive perspective, where in our state, from where in our economy of our state can we lead the nation, and then let's target our efforts there. That proposal, those plans, should be done sometime around the end of March, and we believe whatever those recommendations are should be incorporated into our public policy moving forward. We understand that, as we all talked about before, the corporate franchise tax has often plagued our state. It's actually a form of double taxation. Senator Smith, I believe, has filed legislation to repeal that or definitely modify it. So I guess we're proposing that we move his plan forward. The final piece of this actually comes into optimal tax policy. And specifically, as many of us know, there have been put forth through the initiative petition process 9 different versions of eliminating the income tax and moving to a flat tax, fair tax, whatever you call it. The reality is if something like that were to pass, it would impact approximately 66% of our state general revenue. We believe the Joint Committee on Tax Policy or some organization, we thought the Joint Committee is a very logical one that's comprised of both the House and Senate members, needs to get out in front and start understanding this, understand the real-world impact to us, not only of what does this mean from a financial perspective, you know, get some of our folks working on what we believe the rate would need to be, what's going to be taxed, what's not going to be taxed. Basically, what is optimal tax policy moving forward? If you are going to go create, for lack of a better term, if you're going to go build a new state and implement the optimal tax policy to drive your economy, what would that look like? And then let's have the discussion about how do we get from where we are today to that point. And understanding these aren't things that you get resolved in this session. But the reality is there is a very strong initiative moving forward with both technical understanding and the financial resources to move a proposal like this. If the legislature or some organization does not get out in front and start understanding what that means, the potential you can have a very positive impact, or it could be a very negative impact. But nobody knows. You know, basically, to sum it up, as we move forward, our state needs to look to simplify the toolkit that's used for business decisions, meaning the incentive process, because by utilizing technology and the speed at which companies are operating today is a much faster endeavor than ever before. And so having to go through and pick bits and pieces out of 60-plus programs no longer works. And we're going to have to give greater flexibility to the decision makers. In this case, whether it's DED, whether it is partially into the governor's office, but the whole debate became how do you balance entitlement incentives and discretionary incentives as we move forward. The other piece is, and this is just more editorial than it is something that we need to do. I would not advocate we do it. But if you looked at what's happening in states around us, and you can look at Kansas last year, you can look at Illinois this year, the reality is that we're in a world, whether I like it or not, or any of us like it or not, where economic incentives, that is the competitive process by which we use to bring companies to our state, encourage companies to stay in our state. And what's interesting, if you use Kansas, which over on my side of the state we hear a lot about, they have all these great programs that, you know, they do a good job of recruiting companies out of Missouri into Kansas. What's interesting is, you know, last year when their budget got tight, they went in and raised taxes. Actually, I believe it was the sales tax is what they increased, which essentially you're taxing individuals, taking those dollars and giving them to companies. And our overall theory is the one thing that we don't want to do is we don't want to put ourselves in a position where we're forced to raise taxes on the people of the state. And so I think that as we go forward, our fundamental understanding has to be we're going to have to reform the process that we used because the world of tax credits no longer facilitates the incentive structure necessary to compete going forward. And that means there's going to be dramatic changes in all of this. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions of Senator Lager? Senator Callahan?
Senator Lager, I appreciate your work on this. As far as the governor's task force this summer, I don't have that in front of me. How much, if you adopted that plan, would that result in savings? Was it around $200 million?
That's when it's totally phased in. I think it's going to be several years before that happens. I think initially, you know, it's probably smaller numbers, 25, 50 million your first year, and then you're going to graduate up from there.
And then, and that commission, and correct me if I'm wrong, and Director Kerr last year during the rebooting on this issue, Director Kerr brought forward a plan, and generally they recommended caps on some programs.
Yeah, last year, and Senator Dempsey led this effort last year. Essentially, at the time when we started, that was when Director Kerr had brought that proposal forward. which kind of dominated the discussion from there on. But caps and sunsets were the way that they had recommended to try to manage this. And the other piece of this that they talked about last year that we didn't talk about as much this year but still relevant is the world of incentives today is no longer about tax credits, meaning getting your money after the fact. Everyone today wants cash up front.
Right.
And it's more about front-loading capital than doing it, you know, once
the deal closing
there.
Fund that we've contemplated.
And that's one of the flexibility pieces they've talked about, right, where, you know, at the end, if it's us versus one other state and they're negotiating, that gives them the ability to do that. So I'm not sure.
Did the committee just, I mean, your committee on rebooting said we should look through and evaluate the task force plan.
Yeah,
I guess you also sort of talked about the concept that Director Kerr laid out last year.
Right. As we looked at the Tax Credit Review Commission's work, we couldn't get to consensus on it. But the reality is there are bits, there are pieces and components of that I think we all can agree upon. And then I think that there are other pieces that are going to be just literally public policy debates going forward.
Did your committee recommend that we should file a bill to as a vehicle to begin doing that, or is that too?
We didn't recommend any bill, but what we believe is as we move forward with our tax policy discussion, whatever that tax policy looks like, whatever the incentive structure looks like, we believe that that commission has done a lot of work that should be included in that process.
All right, thank you.
Senator Stouffer.
Senator, I saw a really interesting set of research over the weekend where it showed that more than 40%, I think 43% of job growth is in the companies between 10 employees and 100 employees, and that the way to really grow economic development is to take away the barriers that keep those companies that are already established in your community. This had to do with rural development, but those companies, instead of enticing companies to move and stealing jobs from one entity to another, to take away the barriers and help those companies grow from that 10 to 100, that it was, number one, they're already there, and number two, it's a whole lot cheaper to do that. And I think 43% of the job growth across the nation was in that group of companies that are growing and just needed a help. And so I think it made a lot of sense to me. I've got those figures probably.
I'd like to see that article, but that's going to take a complete rethinking of our process.
I know.
Right now, the majority of our tools are all for companies of 100 employees or over.
That's the reason I brought it up, because I think that could be very fruitful ground in those companies that have established themselves. They've gotten up to 10 employees or more, and then that growth to 100 is that's where you can get wide reducing unemployment.
Thank you,
Senator Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lager, I know you've tracked this before. What do you know what the size of the tax credit liability is right now?
I don't. My understanding, and actually Brian Schmidt and I talked about it just the other day, my understanding is DED is updating those numbers. And
it was like over $2 billion.
Yeah,
like last year?
Last year it was $2.2 billion. The question now is many of the projects that are counted in that $2.2 billion, DED has gone back and said, okay, they're never going to happen, so we're going to take them off the books. And so now what they're trying to do is give us a more accurate picture of what they think realistically could actually occur.
And that kind of gets to that point that you made earlier about, well, you can enact all of the Tax Credit Review Commission's changes tomorrow, and you wouldn't have $200 million in savings.
Correct.
That's where over time you can
get
up
there.
To that. But as we look at it from a budget perspective this year, there's not $200 million in savings.
Yeah, if we wanted real financial savings, if we were doing this because we want real financial savings, we should have done it 2 years ago.
It's kind of like pension reform.
That's right. It's
over time, there's of great benefit to the
That's
state
correct.
From a budget perspective.
Not to mention the fundamental debate about, are we going to continue to live in a world where we're using an incentive structure that was more relevant in the 80s or the early 90s versus 2010?
agree with you on certainly on that part as well. Thank you.
Senator Lemke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Loggard, I'm curious if there was any testimony when looking at taking a global look at our tax policy in the state. Was there any comparison to states that are of similar size, similar population, where we were comparing, apples with apples? And the one that comes to mind for me is Tennessee. As did the committee have any
Nope.
testimony as far as the tax policy in Tennessee and the direction they took 30 years ago,
Right.
which was a different direction than we took in the state of Missouri?
We did not have that type of testimony in this committee. That is the type of testimony that we believe should occur in that, whether it's the Joint Committee on Tax Policy, whatever this group is, that we formally give them a charge of saying, you need to go understand and figure out what is optimal tax policy, you know, for the next 30 years, not the previous 30 years.
Right.
That is the type of stuff that needs to happen that someone has to take the charge on.
And my understanding, if you look at the history of our state, the state of Missouri, that you can see decisions that were made by the people that were in this building that affected the way we did business and our revenues. And usually it's looked at every 40 to 50 years.
Right.
And the time is now, and I think it's very important, that we have some in-depth look at our tax policy.
Well, you actually bring up a valid point, and though we don't often talk about here, and that is, we have all these tax credit programs. One of the reasons we have so many tax credit programs is because in the late 90s, when revenues were flying off, I mean, they couldn't give the money back fast enough because of Hancock. One way to get around that was through tax credits. And so that became a tool to help deal with, at the time, their problem of revenues growing faster than the Hancock limit allowed. And so now we've just, over time, evolved to this point where, although the intentions were good then, the changing of the economy and the changing of the way our tax and our economy and our tax structure works has dramatically changed what we need to do from this point forward.
Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Any other questions of Senator Loggard? Seeing none, this concludes our hearing. I want to say that this has been an impressive, very useful activity that's been undertaken by the Missouri Senate. I want to thank Senator Callahan, his caucus, and certainly the Republican caucus, but the Senate as a whole for working together to come up with these ideas. I think these are very plausible, very possible that we'll have some of these implemented, and certainly want to thank the general public, too, because they have participated in this activity to a great extent, and I think this is healthy, and I think it's something that needs to take place ongoing. And so thank you once again for your work, and we want to take this a step further, and that step is implementation. So thank you again, and I'd like to remind members of my caucus that there will be a caucus hearing up in the Senate lounge following this meeting. Caucus, yeah. Thank you very much.